A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. In the sky so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day. Sunny day now. My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day. Hey, hey, it's a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Anton Bettis with you this morning. We'll be taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Anton, just a beautiful day to get out and finish up whatever you have to do out in your yard.
It really is. If you've got leaves to rake or perennials to clean up, you know, it's just a great time to do that. You know, winterizing small engines is another thing that, if you're done with the leaves, needs to be done so you don't have repairs in the spring.
Right. This morning you wanted to start out and talk about apples and the importance they have played in our past and really providing a food source through the winter, and that it's you have to find appropriate ways to store them.
You do. So historically, apples, you know, go back thousands of years, and they have been important for different purposes. But they didn't exist like we have now, where you have Honeycrisp and Golden Delicious and all these modern varieties, mm-hmm. to where the ones that are sold in the grocery stores are just for eating. You know, you would have an apple tree for cider, and you would have one for winter storage that you would actually have to store those apples. And so there's a huge history there on the apples. But the take home is that apples like to be stored somewhere around 32 degrees, if you can do it, somewhere below 40. And then they like higher humidity. And so a lot of times people will store them in those homemade refrigerator, you know, cellars that you see sometimes that are buried in the ground or in a basement room that's really cool. The refrigerator can work, but you need to put them in the crisper drawer to where the humidity stays up, or keep them in a plastic bag that's open a little bit so that they can circulate. But the reason a lot of times the apples will kind of shrivel a little bit is because of low humidity.
So you're telling me when I buy my apples at the grocery store or wherever I buy them, if I keep them in the grocery bag, they'll do better in the crisper?
They will if you open that bag up so that it can breathe a little bit. You don't want it completely sealed. And sometimes those bags are made to breathe and they'll say on there, but if they're not, then take the zip tie off and open it up a little bit. But if you leave those in the bag, they'll actually store better.
Mm-hmm. The apples right now are delicious.
Like, oh, they are.
They are just delicious. And I love this time of year for apples because I probably have eaten more apples in the past 2 weeks than I've eaten in months.
Yeah, we actually, and this is going to be for a future show, but we had a taste testing here and we had 20 varieties of apples, mm-hmm. that were anything from modern to, we had one called Roxbury Russet, which is the oldest known apple cultivar of North American origin. So when the settlers brought their apples over in the 1600s, they didn't do well, but those apples kind of crossed with each other. And this one that we ate, this Roxbury Russet, is the oldest known cultivar that we have, or variety of apple. So we had some fun. We'll get that up.
Okay. I don't know what that was, but
I thought we were going to breaking news.
No, we're not.
Man, whoever's running that, this Roxbury Russet apple, so boring. I'm going to news. So anyway, it was fun, but the way that they would be stored isn't critical, because back in the day, you know, 100, 200 years ago, especially if you were homesteading, those apples were part of your food, and if you mm-hmm. didn't have them, you were in danger of starving.
Right. Well, I'm excited to see how that went. Dave Meekum's just playing stuff randomly here. Just like, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited, but I'm not that excited to, like, oh, my goodness. I am very excited to see how that went. Caitlin and I had planned to come down and be part of your taste testing, and Caitlin came down with a little cold, and you know how careful we're being around here. So we kind of missed out on that. So
no,
will that
it was
be next
fun.
Week that you will it be will able
be
to share
next
that?
Week. Okay. I was going to have it up today, but I was going to get my oil changed and got sideswiped a little bit. And
oh, no.
So
the
vehicle's fine. But it was a couple hours to get everything taken care of. And so it'll be up next week.
Apple tasting. We're looking forward to that.
You know, it was a fun thing because a lot of the varieties are not commercially available like in stores, mm-hmm. but they taste really good. And it could be that the skin's a little thick or it needs to sit, you know, for a amount of time before you can eat it. Or the apple was bred and selected for cider. You know, there's lots of different reasons, but a lot of the varieties you'll never get in the store, and you have to go to gardeners markets to specialty growers to find them. But it was fun.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that next week. And if people are interested in learning more about apple storage, they can learn more on our KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, because I see that you have posted the article already.
We have.
All right. Let's get right to our phone lines. We have people who've been waiting quite some time. Let's talk to Bonnie in Centerville. Good morning, Bonnie.
Good morning. My question is about my roses. I have a lovely rose garden on the corner in our neighborhood, and it's kind of my pride and joy. But the last couple of years, the first bloom, the leaf, what I'm talking about for primarily is the leaves on the rose bushes. They look normal, and they came out, you know, just like a rose leaf should look. And then after that first bloom, the next amount of growth that came on, the leaves looked smaller and were curly, like totally different, like something's wrong with, like the whole garden is diseased. I probably have, well, I have been bad about, you know, not cleaning my utensils between each bush as I prune, so whatever's happened maybe took over the whole garden. But I wonder if you know what would cause that.
Well, curly leaves could be a lot of different things. And so without some pictures or further reference, it's really hard to say, because it could be a viral disease, it could be a fungal disease, and it could be herbicide damage. And it also could be something along the lines of just even wind. And so when the leaves started to curl, do you know if it coincided with maybe putting down lawn weed killer?
No, it doesn't coincide with that.
Okay, because we would really need some pictures, because there's just not enough to go on. But I would suspect maybe powdery mildew.
none of the white stuff on it. I've searched the internet a lot, and I've seen powdery mildew before, and you know, if it's not that, if it's not herbicide and it's not fungal, what else could it be?
Well, it could be viral, and if it's a virus, there's nothing you can do. Maybe try to prune it out if it's only one section. Those sometimes can cause a lot of leaf deformations. But do you happen to have pictures?
I don't, but I could. I would love to send some in if I could. Is this something we could do?
You can either upload them to the Greenhouse Facebook page or to Utah Gardening Experts on Facebook.
Okay.
Utah Gardening Experts has a lot of horticulturists looking at things, and so either of those would be fine.
That'd be great.
That would be very helpful, Bonnie, just to go to the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page and send us a message with the picture.
KSL Greenhouse page. Okay. I really am interested in getting this solved, and thank you for taking my call.
You bet. Thanks for calling this morning. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500, back after a quick break.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria and Ton with you this morning. 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Let's go to our phone lines. And Robert is in Riverton. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
How can we help you?
Been enjoying the view from the Shoreline Trail up here above Draper.
Awesome.
Anyway, in my neighborhood, we for ornamental trees on the streets, we have these fruitless pears. And my neighbor next door had someone hit one of his with a car, and it was a fairly small tree. And when it, fortunately, he saved it, and when it started growing back, started having pears. And I was just wondering what would cause that, and you know, what I'm just curious about that process.
There's no such thing as a fruitless pear. And so they all will eventually start producing pears. And some years they're heavier than others, but the pears will only be about an inch. And then they have a tendency to drop in January and February.
Yeah, the ones that, you know, normally come out on the other trees are like maybe a half inch or three quarters.
So actually, half inch is actually closer. But yeah, there's no everyone, not everyone, but when you go to nurseries, people are like, I want fruitless pear, and they sometimes don't produce pears for 5 or 10 years. But they're, the fruitless pear does not exist.
Well, this one, after the accident, as it started to grow back, began to produce full-size pears. And I was just wondering.
There could be a rootstock that came back up that is growing a bigger pear or something along those lines. Because the calorie pear, which is our flowering ornamental pear, produces about that half-inch fruit. And if it was growing bigger pears, then I suspect the rootstock took over.
Interesting. If you've got a second for one more question, I've got a neighbor that's got some really wonderful blackberries, the best I've ever seen. And if she's willing to give me some cuttings or whatever, is there a way to propagate those and put them in my yard?
You can. You would want to get some one-year-old wood in late winter and get some cuttings that are probably 18 inches long, and then you would put those into potting soil and then let them root. Now, that's a, kind of an oversimplification. There's some other things that you can should do. Maybe cover, you know, earlier in the show, we talked about covering the top of the pot with a plastic, almost like a bread sack with holes in it to increase the humidity. But it's actually not too hard to root those blackberries out. If you were to get online and just search rooting blackberries, or get on YouTube and just search rooting blackberries from cuttings, that's what you would search. But the basic process is basically 18 inches of stick shoved into the pot, and so that the top's still up, and then you put the plastic bag over, rubber band the plastic bag to the pot, put some air holes in it, and then let it start to grow normally and leaf out.
And the best time to do that is late winter?
Well, late winter. And so you'd bring those indoors and put them in a west or south window, or if you have like a sunroom or something along those lines. You'd need to make sure they didn't dry out.
Okay, but I should wait until like March or April.
Don't do it now, because even if you did root them and you don't have a greenhouse, where are you going to, you know, grow them all winter long? And so you,
right,
this late winter is going to be the time you want to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your help. Enjoy your show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your call this morning. And that number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Tana, we have a number of people asking about transplanting raspberries and when the best time to do that would be.
Early spring is actually the best time. You know, they become available at the garden centers in late March, usually through early April. And that's about the time you want to do it. You know, if it were an emergency and, you know, someone's putting a cement pad over their raspberry patch, do it now and just dig them and get as much of the root as you can. Now, some cautions here. If you're taking raspberries from neighbors that are old, you know, 5 or 10 years old, I wouldn't do it. I would just buy new raspberries because they are very susceptible to viruses over time that will diminish their productivity and pretty much spoil your soil for growing raspberries. So unless they're fairly new plants, I just would wait and buy new ones. You know, it's not worth taking somebody's 10-year-old plants that probably have viruses in them. So,
all right. Next person is wondering, they say they're wondering if the low temperatures last week that froze the leaves, they're wondering why the trees aren't losing those leaves yet. If they froze, did they freeze the leaves on the deciduous trees?
Yeah. So the leaves on the deciduous trees go through a physiological process to actually fall off the trees. And it is as much as we can say this, a purposeful action of the tree to drop the leaves. Mm-hmm. And the frost, because those leaves froze, it stopped that physiological process.
Okay. And there's nothing to be done about that.
No, the trees should be fine. They were last year. The stone fruits have suffered quite a bit, you know, especially peaches and sometimes cherries. We didn't get quite as cold. But for the most part, I think trees will be fine.
All right. Next person's wondering what they should plant, what kind of a tree to plant next to a bank fence, which is 60 feet long, west of their home. They live in Spanish Fork near the canyon, so they get a lot of wind, so they're concerned about that. And then when would they plant?
They could plant now, and it would be fine. And it depends on the size of the tree. It's really hard to give specifics without, you know, we want one 20 feet tall or 50 feet tall, but generally, you know, it's a good time of year, and trees in Spanish Fork Canyon hold up to the wind. They might grow a little crooked, but they will hold up. Hawthorn trees are oftentimes available, and they're great and will tolerate most soils. They're native along our streams and rivers. Some of the crab apples might be a good choice. They're durable and will do well. Some columnar oak, they might need to stake those for a year or two until they get established because of the wind, but they would probably hold up also.
All right. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.